Global from Asia podcast, episode 468. Ever wonder how a seasoned Amazon FBA seller scales to millions? This week on Global from Asia, I sit down with Sean Chow, founder of Smicky's Group, to unpack his journey from 2015 to now, sharing his game-changing product development strategies. Stick around for the outro, where I reveal why some folks think I've vanished from the internet.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business is broken down into straight-up, actionable advice.
I'm your host, and as always, joined by the amazing Lisa Yusin, our GFA community manager. Lisa, what's the vibe in the community this week?
Hey, Mike, the GFA community is buzzing. We've got folks gearing up for Q4 sales, and there's tons of excitement for the Cross-Border Summit 2025 in Chiang Mai, November 3rd to 5th. Our listeners are also sending in some great questions. Keep them coming via our Google form on the website.
Love that energy, Lisa. Today, we're diving into episode 468, a human edition with Sean Chow, founder of Smicky's Group, and a Cross-Border Summit 2025 speaker. Sean's dropping serious knowledge on scaling an Amazon FBA business and mastering new product development. We'll hear how he turned challenges into millions, plus a sneak peek of his summit talk.
And don't miss the outro, where Mike spills the tea on why people are blowing up his WhatsApp, wondering if he's still kicking.
Yeah, Lisa, I'm very much alive. More on that later. But first, let's talk about the Cross-Border Summit 2025. It's our seventh annual event happening November 3rd to 5th in Chiang Mai, Thailand. If you're an advanced e-commerce entrepreneur, this is your chance to network with pros like Sean Chow and level up your game. Grab your tickets at crossbordersummit.com.
Let's hear from our GFA community. This week's listener question is coming up in the main segment. Ready, Mike?
Born ready, Lisa. Let's get to it. Ready to take your e-commerce game global? Join us at the Cross-Border Summit 2025 in Chiang Mai, Thailand, November 3rd to 5th. Network with top entrepreneurs, learn advanced strategies, and scale your business. Get your tickets at crossbordersummit.com, plus sign up for a free GFA VIP account at account.gfavip.com for exclusive resources.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to our Global from Asia podcast. Just catching up before the recording, getting up to the 500 show mark. And it's always great to connect with good people in the community and fellow sellers. And we have with us today Sean Chow. I've had a pleasure to meet you and bump into you in the Chiang Mai and in the seller community over the years. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Sean is the founder of Smicky's Group, a seasoned Amazon FBA expert. And he's also going to be speaking at this year's Cross-Border Summit 2025 right here in our hometown of Chiang Mai. So thanks for coming on today, Sean.
How's it? Nice. Yeah, thanks, Mike. I really appreciate it and happy to be on.
It's a pleasure to have you. And yeah, I mean, 10 plus years experience on e-commerce and Amazon, and you have a portfolio of 7- and 8-figure private label brands. So it's really a pleasure. I think today we're going to go into the journey of how you got into e-com and how you've, the good, the bad, the ugly. I think the ugly is always the best part for us to learn and to share our war stories. And then, of course, you're out here in Chiang Mai and in Asia, and I know you go to Japan. So some of your Asia experiences and story too. So let's just dive in. So how did you get started? Like, what was the light bulb moment?
Well, I mean, it's like you said, it's been 10 years now. So like thinking back about all the way back when we started, it's kind of a trip thinking it's been that long. But basically, where it started is I always loved to travel, and like I'm Australian, and that's just something in the culture where you kind of like have a rite of passage where after you finish like high school and then your holidays during college, you go on a trip somewhere, you save up all your money and you spend it all and you come back with nothing after you have like such a like a great travel experience. And then like after doing that a couple times, coming back with nothing in my pocket, I was just kind of thinking about like what are options to make money while I travel? And I didn't really have any ambition to make any grand or big business. All I wanted to do was just like pay pay my way for like hostels and traveling and just do it like kind of on that level. And that's kind of where my brother was doing some things. Like he got started on Amazon, dabbling, doing private label, white labeling products and having a little bit of success. And then one of his best friends as well was an early ASM member. And I think a lot of people in the community got their start thanks to that program. And he was actually doing super well. So I was like thinking that, oh, this might be an option to kind of get that goal of being able to make a bit of money and traveling. So yeah, that's where I started. And I once I finished up university, I was actually in the hospitality industry for a while, working bars, like managing bars and heading up like cocktail programs, and that was my passion and I loved to do that. But after I finished university and I kind of didn't want to do that anymore, I saw where it would lead. The ceilings of reaching the top of that industry, it's not where I wanted to go. So I kind of like I moved, and I moved to where my brother was living, which was in Cebu, Philippines, and his best friend as well at that time, he was also there. So it was more to kind of learn from them and get their knowledge and see if I could, yeah, if I could kind of replicate what they were doing. And that was how I got my start.
Cool. Well, I got a couple of notes, but similar. Did you ever hear? I don't know if it's even a real term or just something I heard in like a small group, but coconut cowboy. Have you ever heard of that? I don't know if that's a thing, but
No, never. You can
coconut
explain.
cowboy. I heard from a guy, Peter Miller, and a nice guy. It does sports stuff, but he says a lot of us start just to make enough money to get by. Like all I need is X amount to like have location independence or to leave my home country, like Australia, US, Europe, whatever, like live in Asia. And then we get stuck as coconut cowboys. We're just getting by. Like I need only like $1,000 a month, right? Like, especially here in Chiang Mai, there's a lot of these nomads, right? These people, we all, but I think that we all, a lot of us start that way. Like I just need this amount to like quit my job and live over on the road. I remember him calling it coconut cowboy. So it's like, I guess the idea is like it's enough money to have coconuts, like, or
Right.
get
Yeah,
by.
that was the initial goal. But I think like just my predisposition, I'm just naturally am I have naturally an ambitious kind of drive to me. And once I achieved that kind of coconut cowboy status, we were getting a little bit of traction, and then we were just like that like decided to double down on that success and realize that there was like an opportunity here. So we decided to double down on it and actually like moving away from that lifestyle business element and actually designing like a real organization. And that's what we've been focused on in the last like few years is actually like creating an organization as opposed to something like just the lifestyle business.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Don't know. I know we're on the show, but Trushar, I think Cebu, I think Trushar. I don't know
Yeah,
if.
actually that's so funny you
Is
mentioned that.
that him?
That was the mentor that I was talking about. Yeah.
That's him, huh?
Yeah,
Yeah. He's been on the show, and I know him
that's
well.
it.
I've had
Yeah.
it some deep. He's gotten deep with me, kind of like, yeah, like if he's, yeah, he, yeah, I guess he, I haven't, yeah, he gives it to you straight, right? Like, yeah.
It's a very small world, I guess, in this space. That's
Yeah,
really, yeah, coincidental. Yeah.
Trishar is great. Yeah, Cebu. Yeah, and but I agree with you, and that's what we try to talk about on the show too, right? We're trying to grow like global businesses. I mean, even though we're in Asia or we're like maybe outside of our, 9 to 5, the first step, like he says, maybe getting out of the matrix, I call it, or getting out of the normal. And so this is an interesting story, and then. So systems, right? I think it's the point that I'm seeing, like from what you said, like systematizing it. Because I think a lot of people, I talk to huge sellers, even 7 figures, and they're still doing everything themselves. The only thing they have like a one VA. I think I still meet sellers that are really successful, but they do it all themselves. I don't like.
Yeah, I mean, for us, I'm kind of like a systems brain, that kind of like thinker. So it always like I feel like that side of things came naturally to me. And you do meet people that they have like decent sized businesses and it's just them plus a VA. But when you kind of like spread it out and think about probabilities, like they're like outliers and maybe they kind of either they're really smart and have a great work ethic and they've kind of found their space where they're able to do that, or they kind of just lucked into something where they're in it and then they built their expertise from there. However, like if you want to look at it from a probability standpoint, that is just not like the norm for most people. If you want to increase your probability of success of building an organization and scaling it up to beyond seven figures, eight figures, and then like mid eight figures to nine, you really need to think about like systems. And then every time basically there's like a, I think, I don't know if it's a formal concept, but basically every time you double or triple, your systems break. And so you just always have to constantly be reinventing yourself if you want to reach another kind of level to yourself and your business.
Fully agree. And just to support that, we have to push. Like you said, I think to be an entrepreneur or a business owner, you could just not push your limits, or you could just like hit that plateau. But like you said, if you want to break through, you got to like change yourself, like your mindset. I think it goes into the next point. Like, what's the biggest, some of your failures, which I don't know if there's really a word failure, to be honest, debts or mindset shifts that you've had, like you're kind of touching on it, but do you want to go into that?
Well, I mean, when I started, actually, I didn't have any success until like my fifth, or I think it was my sixth attempt of like a product. So I would like invest in a product, do all the things, like whether it's like create your listing and put your labels and stuff on it, and then try and sell it in PPC and that kind of stuff. So the first like five products that I launched were failures, and like I didn't understand numbers, how to measure all that kind of important stuff back then. And that actually, those five failures, it's this capital intensive business. At that time it was a lot, and I was actually about like 20 grand into debt, like both my own money and I borrowed some family money as well. So it doesn't sound like a lot. The like to me now, like that doesn't feel like a lot now, but back then it felt like a whole lot. But so there was a few failures there, but every single time I learned something and I knew something had to kind of change if I wanted to make it a success. And I just knew so many people like succeeding. So it was not about whether like I was in the wrong opportunity or not. It was just always like looking internally at myself and what I was doing. And obviously something that I was doing was not like right. I had to learn something else, try something different. So it wasn't about that this is not going to work. I always knew that it would work. It was just about like looking at myself and what we were doing and making sure that we kept trying and changing and learning new things until we figured out what worked. And then obviously like on that sixth product, it kind of like took off, and that was like our first successful product. And then like going forward, I feel like that mindset is really helpful going forward now. I mean, we've gone through so many changes over the last 10 years. Any industry in the world through like the pandemic and just different big macroeconomic shifts, you're in our little environment on Amazon, like everything has gone through so many changes. But like for me, I still see like so many people succeeding that it's like it's not never been about, oh, this is the wrong place to be. It's just, oh, we need to be better. And I think we talked a little bit before we started recording about there's not being as many sellers these days because it's really hard. But on the flip side of it, there are the competency and skill level of the sellers in the game or the people in the game at the moment is like a lot higher, but it's basically they're just capturing a lot more market share. And that's what we've been seeing for us as well. A lot of the skills we have gotten good at over the last 10 years, it's just like skill stacking and compounding. And we start to kind of, it's almost easier now, even though the game is really hard.
No, I've actually talked to some people trying to get into e-commerce and want to move into e-com. There's a couple elements to that part, but the focus of this part is I think it's the best industry to be in. I mean, a lot of the SEO guys, especially in Chiang Mai, a lot of the affiliate marketers I bump into, they want to start doing their own brand. They want to do their own product. They want to do real e-commerce. They're super scared because Google algorithm, ChatGPT, like, I feel like those kind of businesses are much riskier than us. I mean, I feel much safer. I have a few brands myself, and I feel a lot a lot in a better position than like an information only business. I know product business is hard. I'm feeling on a launch right now. I have to liquidate, I think. I thought I was gonna, but yeah, it's hard now.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree with that. And in a lot of ways, it's because of all the complexity. And I feel really lucky as well because, like, when we got started, it was a lot less complex. It was easier, and we were able to kind of earn our stripes, get our feet wet, and learn on the go. So all that kind of contextual knowledge of that experience just becomes taken for granted as background information, and it helps us make decisions going forward because we've seen a lot more. And we've been through ups and downs of pandemic lows, pandemic highs, post-pandemic lows, so on and so forth, stabilization, tariffs, all this kind of stuff. So it's like you've just seen a lot and we take it for granted, but it sets you up for like your ability to kind of operate in the industry a little bit more, a little bit better.
Yeah, I have a book, E-commerce Gladiator. I feel like we're in the arena. Sellers are the modern day like people in the arena, right? Like there's also the famous quote, I think it's Theodore Roosevelt, the man in the arena. I don't know if you're into, it's a little bit long and people can look it up if they're interested. But the main point is like, it's so easy to be a critic. It's not the critic who counts. It's not the person in the audience looking and criticizing about the person that's falling and getting scratched and getting dusty and getting bloody. So like I try to teach my kids that too. I say like it's easy to criticize or complain. It's easy. That's the easy way. The easy way is to say it's hard. It's I don't want to do it, right? And I think for me, the biggest mindset shift I've had is it's up. It's how I take it. I told my daughter this the other day. It's how I take it, right? It's not what happens. It's how I take it. And I think that's a mindset shift, right? You can blame the Chinese sellers. You can blame Donald Trump for the tariffs. You can blame whoever you want to blame about COVID. Like, but you just got to get better. And it's like a warrior mindset, right? Like,
Yeah, and then also flipping like any kind of victim mindset into like every single thing is like an opportunity, even if it's like your affects your business or affects you really heavily in a negative way, it's always an opportunity to kind of do like figure it out. And usually like the biggest downfalls rep are, have become the biggest opportunities and growth levers for us. So that's it's just kind of like you said, how you take it, and that's super important.
and I also try to tell people big companies probably have the same problems that, I don't want to call you small. I feel like I'm small, or like even these multinational corporations, I don't think they have it so easy. They're dealing with similar problems. So I think we all have to get through this. One point though, I don't want to skip past it is you mentioned skill stacking, and I'm curious for myself. I'm sure listeners are interested in some other systems or processes that you have said are a game changer. I'd love to hear about that a bit.
Yeah, I mean, so I feel like there's been, in our experience, what I thought was the most important thing when I started was just kind of a road toward where we are now. And what I thought was most important back then was just kind of like a skill, like a building block to kind of get to the next stage. So I think when we started, there was a lot of just get a product, make sure it's like differentiated, but then you just slap your label on it. And it was like not a lot of front-loaded work. And a lot of it was like manipulation of the algorithm and learning how to do that. I understand momentum and the things that you needed to do for that, whether it was reviews or sales velocity, how to manipulate that in your favor and that kind of thing. And I feel like that first part where I was just a solo entrepreneur, I learned a whole bunch of how that worked and understood it. There's been many changes over the years of how the marketplace operates, the algorithm, et cetera. But I mean, for the most part, if you understand the core concepts of like relevancy and what the platform wants to show at the top, then all those principles still are sound. You just can't manipulate them as much the same way as you used to. And then I kind of moved towards like, oh, we were doing this. Now we want to like grow. How do we think about building systems? How do we bring other people into the organization to help us with this? So that was like, for me, learning how to be a leader, how to train other people under me so they can be competent and efficient and effective. And then that was like a big season in the way that we did things. And like, see, all these things are really important. And then I guess going forward from like during the pandemic, it was about like managing risk and forecasting and learning how to do that, take bets that had the highest effective expected value and learning how to do that. And I feel like now it come full circle. The biggest thing we've been focusing on over the past 3, 4 years that's been a big contributor to our success is having like a product development framework and process that is hard, black and white metrics that we want to hit for product development. And that just comes full circle because it's like, oh, we're doing all these things to kind of trick our way or hack our way to the top, but like the industry we are in is actually consumer goods. So like our product development process is all around like, oh, actually asking what the consumer wants. And that's like, to me, that was a big light bulb moment. It's like, oh, we're in consumer goods. Why don't we ask them what they want, build them what they want, and understand how to do it in a way that leans into the algorithm a little bit, and it makes everything so much easier. So, and all that things like training your team and training each person and then training leaders how to lead and all this kind of stuff. It's all like sounds intimidating when you talk about it from that high level, but it's all like stacking skills over time, and it really compounds over a longer period of time.
Yeah, fully agree. It's definitely, I think you'd agree, it's definitely a huge upfront investment, right? Of not really money, but time and brain. I mean, for me, I remember I was going through making SOP and yeah, like KPIs and tracking. It's a humongous up. I mean, I don't know, maybe you don't have to agree with me, but it's a huge upfront. I mean, I think maybe that's why some sellers don't go there, or some sellers say, oh, it's so much work to teach somebody how to do it. I just do it myself. Right? That's like a common one. Oh, I gotta teach somebody. It's gonna take more work than me to do it myself. And that, I think that's a limiting belief, right? Or that's a, like, that's gonna cap you, right? You have to get over that. But a lot of people
It
get
is
stuck
a
on that.
big, I do think it is a big time investment, but I think the intimidating thing is people think it needs to be done like all in one go. When often, like we kind of build out the way we kind of build out our SOPs and knowledge bases is we'll structure out and the role and work backwards from the results we want and and we kind of set out a curriculum as we onboard new team members. And they'll go through the curriculum with whoever is leading that team, the direct report. And for the longest time, like for a long time, it was me teaching them, but now we have other leaders doing the same process. It's just basically how to delegate or effectively and how to train and bring people in. So we just create the curriculum and then you just have some sort of cadence, rhythm, and consistency to doing it, whether it's twice a week or once a week. And then when people look at, if you do it for like 6 months to a year, you create this like really big solid knowledge base. And when people look at it, they get intimidated and think it's like some big deal. But really, it's just like consistency over not even a long time frame, like a medium time frame. And then after that, you have this big knowledge base that they can always refer back to. And then have regular kind of more off the cuff check-ins and calls where you're just coaching and reminding and refreshing concepts. And then that way it's like a lot easier to kind of build in that system when you're a solo entrepreneur and you're just looking to train and hire people.
Yeah, I'm sure. Matt Singer, he's also going to be speaking at the summit, Cross Border Summit this year. He's a management consultant. Also, he's I don't want to forget the wrong country in Europe, but Northern Europe or origin. But he spent a lot of time in the Philippines with a huge company in Davao. He built like an outsourcing company, but now he's mostly. But he's also done management and training and he systems, and he would echo similar. And he's going to also speak about at the summit about like mindset to go to like 7 or 8 figures in your business as like in management. So it's exciting to hear.
Yeah, I mean, like once you go past like yourself and then scaling up, a lot of the problems just become people problems, and it's a good place to be. But yeah, it's challenging too, and I can understand why it's intimidating for people.
I remember one specific event I was hosting in China back in the day, And Danny McMillan was the host of a sellers panel of Chinese sellers. And he asked some sellers, what's the best hack you have to be like, this is like 2018 or something. He's like, what's the best hack you have for your Amazon business? And I remember one guy's answer. And he says, it's not about the hack. It's about the system. And it's about, I don't even know. He says, I don't even know. I'm not even operating it. I have a whole team. I manage teams that do the hacks. And then we have multiple teams. He's a huge seller, but he would say that was his answer, right? So, because I feel like we're not really talking about like Amazon specifically in this journey. It's like mindset and systems and teams and which is important, right? And it's especially for scaling. Because yeah, you can learn about how to do it. Like ASM was amazing. I wish I participated. I have met really great people in different groups there, but yeah, it's an amazing to get the tactics, but it's really about like you said, systematizing and building out processes and teams and people, which
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I do. I don't feel like I'm the best entrepreneur. I'm seeing other people do it like better and faster, but I feel like I was like wanted to get my hands dirty. It's like when we worked in bars, we had an analogy that we wanted to know how to clean the floors, wash the glasses, like do everything on the back of house before you got to like being like the head bartender and managing the venue and that kind of stuff. So I had that philosophy going in, and in some ways that created like a slow process for growth for us. So as opposed to like someone that thinks like system first and top down thinking, where they bring in the expertise from the top and they hire down. So it's kind of more like bottom up, but now I kind of have thankful, like in a good position where now we're thinking about top down, our business is doing well enough where we can bring in like talent that can think about that top down strategy where they come in, they're the talent and they tell us like what to do, like best practices and that kind of thing. And yeah, so there's different ways to skin the cat. And now we're looking at that way. But I do feel like now I know where all the dead, like the skeletons are hidden. I know where like the business inside and out, because I started as the janitor and now as the head of the corporation organization. And yeah, so it's just like that whole thing of skill stacking. That was my philosophy on it. And like I said, I don't feel like it was the most effective, but if you asked me 10 years ago if you'd be happy with where you're at and told me where I'd be at right now, I would be like, I'll take that every day of the week.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's the best. That's the best, right? You're happy with where you are. I mean, I think I definitely am. But unfortunately, I think there's a lot of people that aren't, and I hope that they can be. I want everybody, but I feel like you got to go through these hard times, right? And this mindset, like you said earlier, right? You had to go through a lot of kind of upfront time and pain to get to where you are and get through that and push yourself through that. So let's go to like lessons learned and some mentorship ideas here. Like, what's that one thing, is the one thing, the one lesson that you wish you had known at the 10 years ago plus? What would that be?
Well, I think I kind of skipped over the question before you asked, like, what is the biggest like game changer for us? Like, and I was talking through like skill stacking, but the biggest game changer for us has been the way we think about product development. Like, and you mentioned as well, like the whole like Amazon space, but really the way I view it is we are in consumer goods. Like, we're making consumer products, but Amazon is just a channel. It's just one channel of many potential ones. So we really had like a black and white framework around how we do our new product development, utilizing focus groups and simulations, market simulations that reflect like a kind of a test market environment in the way that we develop our products. And we kind of benchmark against all the top performers in the market, I guess, aspirational competitors, and start from there. And then we'll see what's like really important to the customers. And we try and get like the demographics as correct and as segmented as possible. So we try and create a mini scenario that reflects the market as much as possible. You can't really do it until you can't really know until you go into the game and launch your product, but we can try and recreate a reflection of what a market is with setting like a specific scenario to the participants, making sure that the participants are the correct demographic, have specific segmentation and whatever you're trying to do, whether it's like hobby or an affliction, like maybe they have diabetes or like heart disease or something, whatever you're developing for, whatever market you're developing for, trying to get like really segmented. And that's been the big game changer for us, like how to have a framework around focus groups, market testing, and then developing products from that and actually listen to it. And then all that stuff that I talked about with the skill stacking, like we got better at imagery, we got better at creating image stacks, we got better at copywriting, we got better at like keyword optimization and market analysis. So all that stuff was like all this stuff in the first 6 years, 7 years that we were good at. And I felt like the missing piece was having a framework around actually creating good products and being able to do it consistently, because like you mentioned it, it's expensive. People get intimidated because the upfront investment is so high. Like I started with $5,000, my first couple products, and then I borrowed a few thousand more to keep trying. But that's still like small potatoes compared to what the investment is these days for a new product launch. And then it's really tough when the percentages of success that you're probably seeing, like maybe you launched 10 products and four might work and six might fail. But those six failures are a significant chunk of investment. And if you could just turn your success rate from 40% to 80%, that's like a crazy significant change that you can build a foundation off and scale really hard on. So we've been able to do that and learn a whole bunch about understanding how to interpret consumer insights and data to create products that people want, and then utilizing our skill set in design and copy and direct response marketing to not just create what people want, which is like creating the five-star product, but creating products that actually drive click-through and conversion before we even place a purchase order. So we can kind of like get that validated. That's been like a massive game changer for us. And that's been huge, because from there there's so many like second and third order effects that come into play when you have this confidence that what you're going to launch is going to succeed.
I agree. I'm tempted. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll get into it in at the summit, or I mean, I don't know if I mean we're going a little bit over, getting close to our time here, but yeah, I've looked it up actually. I didn't know MPD, but it is like a thing on the internet too. Like there's a this.
Yeah, I mean, like as people that started in this space, on the Amazon space, it's not the first thing that gets talked about is you talk about hacks and you talk about just private labeling, slapping a label on something and trying to like hack your way to the top. Like that doesn't work anymore. And like there's a whole industry around it. Like all consumer, like CPG companies, consumer companies, they all, like any of these big public multi-billion dollar conglomerates, they all utilize consumer insight firms to drive their product development. And there's a whole like industry of it. Like you got consumer insight agencies like Nielsen or Kantar, and they're basically the NPD arm or research arm for big consumer companies like Procter and Gamble and Unilever and all that kind of stuff. So that's like a whole, they know how important it is to look at consumer insights to drive product development. And that I feel like that was the missing piece for us to increase our success rate for the products that we launch from, like I'm using a real life example from our business, where we would throw things against the wall. And our philosophy at the start was throw spaghetti at the wall, see what sticks, and then just keep what sticks. So our success rate was about two out of five products, 40%. And that was great at the start when we were able to launch lots and each product could be kept low cost. And then the ones that stuck, we would go harder on. But now each product that you launch is a significant capital investment that it's not feasible anymore to do it that way. And you really want to kind of put the odds back in your favor. So how do you create that 40% and then change it to like a 90 or 100% like guaranteed success? There's never any guarantees, but it's a big game changer from how you do things, because now you're not thinking about if it will succeed. You're thinking about how to deal with cash flow, because it's just so capital intensive when a product succeeds. And when you have all of them succeed, it's like, not tooting my horn, but I'm just saying that it's a very big cash drain, and that's the biggest challenge when you have that kind of process. So yeah, so that's like the biggest game changer for us, is actually looking at consumer insights properly and learning how to interpret that. And that's a whole field of study which you can go so deep on, but I feel like it's the highest leverage activity in this kind of business, or any e-com or consumer business.
Yeah, I mean, I have so many questions on it, but I mean, I guess my thought is there's like a funnel. Everything's like I feel like everything's a funnel, right? But you need data at the top, like this consumer insight data, then you process this, right? And then you move it down the funnel. So you're filtering through like consumer data, consumer insights, right? And then you have some processes, KPIs, of course, your own brand, product catalog, what can match. So I could imagine something like this.
Yeah, and it's a big time investment too, like compared to when you would just slap your label on something off the shelf. Like, the time investment to developing a product from consumer insights, custom for the market, learning how to protect it, it's a significant time investment. And so you want to make sure that the return on your time investment is going to be worth that time you spent on doing it that way. So often, like, our product development process is like 9 to 18 months for a product. So like, all the products that we're developing for, like, need to be at least have a minimum potential revenue threshold. Like, it really needs to be a lot compared to before, when we were happy with like doing many products that would add like 10 grand a month or something. Now we're going after ones that are minimum 100 grand per month, adding on top to our revenue, because of the time investment required to do it this way.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah, I'm happy
Got
to
me
talk to
thinking
you.
a
I'm
lot.
sure, like, I'll talk to you outside the call and
Yeah.
at the summit as well. Like, I'll be
Yeah.
going a bit deep into our philosophy on this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just limited time for now, but it's amazing. Yeah, it is true. Like, we have to. I think one takeaway is I am also not trying to think like an FBA seller, but so many of us say, oh, FBA seller. We shouldn't think like that, right? We're brands and we have, like you said, a consumer product company, right? And we're making our job is to make good products, not like, and Amazon's a channel. And this sounds like a
Absolutely.
great system for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, I mean, first, like, that's what I like, the way I kind of identify is not, I mean, that's our kind of our main channel at the moment. But yeah, we're in consumer goods and we're making products for consumers, and Amazon is like, they reward products that are great and good and that customers want. And it's like a timeless. It's a timeless skill, or a timeless, I guess, foundation of your business, that it doesn't matter what kind of changes to the system come up, you'll always be able to kind of be on top if you create consumer goods in that way, because you're actually creating things that people want. And the benefit of like where we're at the moment is like, Amazon is a marketplace, but it's an algorithmic marketplace. So it's based on an algorithm, click-through rate and conversion rate. Like, that's basically all you look at. And if you design your products based on what people want and you understand consumer insights, how to interpret it, you can create products that lean into like click-through rate and conversion rate. And then you have to back it up on the back end of making a good product, so
Yeah.
you can keep it like 4.7, 4.8 star.
Oh.
And that's how you that just like the game becomes a lot easier, because now it's like more competitive. But in I love the competition, because we have to be good at what we do and make good products.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And yeah, so I think everybody has to get through this mindset shift. Now, I mean, we could get by pre-COVID or even during, probably, yeah, there was definitely crazy times during COVID, get a good product. But this is fascinating, man. I can't wait to chat to you more at this offline and at the summit. Let's move to the lessons learned. Like, we have a point on our outline about assets versus cash flow, businesses and mindset, and then e-com inventory.
Just really quickly on that, that was just like a thought when you asked me that question, like, what are some lessons? And it's kind of hard because, like, all the lessons that I learned early on are just like maybe not the lessons that I would like tell people now, like, what's the most important thing to think about. But I would just say one of the things that I thought about was when I looked at this kind of business as an option, like, if you want to create an income and that's important to you, like, this is probably not the right business for you because it's significantly capital intensive. You have to reinvest when your product does well. You have to reinvest in inventory. Eventually you reach like what I call an equilibrium point where the working capital that funds your inventory becomes sufficient and it just like cash flows. But that takes like a significant amount of time. And then if you have any growth ambitions, then you need to require you need to kind of invest any of your reinvest any of your profit, like reinvested profits, back into the business to grow even further. And you can use that or and a combination of maybe some loans or whatever, like whatever capital instruments you want to use. But like you really don't see the benefits of it in the back until like for a number of years. And it's a different business model to a service business or a info product business where like you get the cash up front and that's great. You get the cash and often I'm a bit jealous of some of my friends that run those businesses. They get that up front, but those businesses are much harder to sell. Their valuations are much lower. So they're almost like front loading the reward. Whereas like for me, the way I look at it was we're building an asset and yeah, we're getting cash flow now. Like now it's a bit more significant, but it took us 10 years to get this to this point. And now we're able to make meaningful distributions from the business. But you know, that first and foremost is we want to kind of grow where we're at. So we're still reinvesting heavily. But we're thinking about it from like an asset building standpoint. So it just depends on what you want. Like what is your goal? Do you want to be the kid that in the marshmallow test waits until the like waits longer to get the second marshmallow or waits even longer so they get three? Or are you want the cash reward more upfront? And there are pros and cons to both, but I didn't know any of that stuff going in. I just was thinking, oh, I'll do this and I'll make money. And this year has been like our most profitable year ever, and it's crazy like how much like money it's making, but I've never felt so broke as well. We have like no cash and it's just like massive cash drain, but it's a great problem. It's like boo-hoo, but like the mindset has to be different. You have to, I think anyone should understand the choices they're making because we're kind of like thinking delayed gratification. We're not getting the cash now, but it'll be bigger on the back end and it, on an exit as well. We'll get that reward on an exit potentially if we wanted to,
I know, right?
as opposed to like getting it all up front and selling a service where you get paid first and
I
do the
know.
thing after.
I know. I've gone back and forth because it is. I've done all kinds of businesses, and especially earlier on, I was more services because of the cash flow, or I would do services to finance the product business. Like I know some others do that, but yeah, it's. I totally feel you. Yeah, we're aligned on those thoughts, but there are those days, like you said, you're writing that check to buy that thing with all your money, and you're like, man, like it is frustrating. It is. It's a good. Yeah, it's a good feeling, but it's also like a. Yeah, of course we should be happy, but it's also like stressful.
It's
I don't know how
funny.
to even say it in words, but that feeling when.
It's just part of the game. That's why, like, you said, what was the lessons? One lesson you'd want to kind of mention. It's like, well, that's the lesson. It's like you can be making money, but you could feel really, really poor. And if you're in it for the long haul and you believe in it, then you know you trust the reward will be there on the back end. But if you are don't like risk and you don't like uncertainty, then maybe your choice is better to go with something where you get the cash up front and maybe you're not thinking about building an asset. You just get the cash up front and then put it in something safer, like S&P 500 or Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. I was going to say Bitcoin. All right. Well, this has been fun. Let's just chat a little about the Asia, right? We're both here in Chiang Mai. You go to Japan often. How's this from Australia? Your origins in Australia, like how has that affected business or mindset and
Yeah, I
thoughts?
mean, it's a great question. It's something I've thought a lot about. And I love Chiang Mai. It's a great place to live. We live a great lifestyle. We have
Dude, it's so
a
great.
lot available to us. But the thing is, I do feel like people that base themselves here full time and they don't leave. I don't mean to offend you if
I
you don't leave.
leave sometimes.
I know you travel a lot. Like they just get comfortable,
Yeah.
and I'm sure you've seen it a
The
lot.
coconut cowboy, I mean, whatever you want to call it, maybe. But continue, sorry.
Exactly. And that's one thing where like I have regularly scheduled kind of trips to conferences and outside here just to get inspired and see what people are doing and being like, oh yeah, I can do that. Or just put that fire back into you, because if you just kind of just stay here, you kind of are potentially at risk of just chilling out and coconut cowboying and be like accepting where you're at, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But for me, like if I want to grow the business, it's great to go outside and get inspiration and then come back here and have a bit of balance, because it is a bit more chilled out. And but I bring that drive and push forward, even though we're in this environment here where it's a little bit more lifestyle based and relaxed. So that's the way I kind of like balance it out. There's always like scheduled times throughout the year where there's like conferences or external things to kind of find that fire outside. And I find that really important. And then, sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, I'm able to just work by myself. Like, I think it was a skill I stacked. Use your skills during COVID. I just learned to just work like by myself. Like, I feel like before COVID it was harder, but I just grind here. Like, it's quiet, it's relaxing. I have my family. It's just knocking on the door actually. And
Yeah,
then
some people have it.
I go like Bangkok for an event, or I go like Hong Kong or China or something, and then come back here. Yeah, like.
Yeah, some people have it. Like, I mean, you just have to look at yourself. And like for me, I know like I kind of get too comfortable, so I kind of program that into my year to make sure that I go find some places to get inspired and get that drive. And then when it comes to Japan, it's also like that's my place where I'll kind of decompress and relax. Like my biggest hobby is snowboarding, so I go there 2 to 3 months of the year and actually just like clock off. And my main focus is being out in the mountains and enjoying
Nice.
that part of my life. So
Perfect.
that's the way I find balance to kind of drive the business forward, but then also like have something outside of work that's not just all about that.
Great. Thanks. Thanks. This has been a really fun. Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit longer, but I've been really enjoying. I hope you enjoy it. And yeah, I think let's just wrap up. Is there something? Of course, we'll have you at the summit in November. Hope people can make it. This will be our seventh one, if you can believe it. I mean, we did four in China before COVID, and then this is our third in Chiang Mai. So it super excited to have you sharing about like some of the things we talked about today with your product research and discovery and launch strategies. Anything you'd like to like shout out, link or
No, I mean, like, yeah, definitely looking forward to the summit. Like I think I said before the call, but like I'm a founder and operator first and foremost. So not really gonna find too much online. And I kind of like purposely designed it that way. But I'm
okay.
looking forward to the summit and giving some value there.
Great.
So anyone that wants to hear that can come along.
Can't wait, man. All right. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and we'll see you in November.
Wow, Mike, what an episode. Sean Chow really brought it, breaking down his Amazon FBA journey and that killer NPD framework. What's your big takeaway?
Lisa, Sean's focus on first principles over quick hacks really hit home. His point about building assets versus just chasing cash flow is gold for our listeners scaling their businesses. Plus, his Cross-Border Summit 2025 teaser has me pumped for November.
Totally agree. Speaking of, let's remind everyone about the Cross-Border Summit, November 3rd to 5th in Chiang Mai. Sean's session on product development is just one of many game changers. Tickets are at crossbordersummit.com. Don't wait.
Absolutely, Lisa. It's the place to be for advanced entrepreneurs looking to forge their own path.
Okay, Mike. We've got to address the elephant in the room. I'm seeing WhatsApp messages from listeners asking if you're still online, or even alive. What's going on?
I'm very much here. I've just been in a deep work phase, diving into AI coding, what I'm calling vibe coding. I haven't been this excited since I built my first website in 1999 or started selling online in 2004. The potential here is massive, and I'm sleeping just 4 to 5 hours a night. Okay, one night was 3 hours, pouring everything into this. It's my upfront investment for a new way of life and business. The abundance coming is almost too big to wrap my head around.
That's the mic we know. Full throttle. All right. GFA community, keep those listener questions coming via our Google form at globalfromasia.com. Mike, any final words?
Just keep forging your own path, folks. Whether it's AI, Amazon, or new markets, embrace the journey. Thanks for tuning in to Global From Asia. See you next week.
To get more info about running an international business, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.